When we think of what we're doing with identifying SEN, it's underpinned by two issues. One is your model about what determines that a child has a special educational need. And the other is where you contextualize that kind of identification. So let me talk about contextualizing first. So we know in the recent analyses of the national data that Anna Vignoli's has completed, that if you're in a particular type of school setting, not just a local authority, you are more likely to be identified as having a speech, language and communication need than if you are in another one. So there are contextual issues about that, which reflects this overall issue about the question of over-identification. And that feeds back to the notion of what kind of model we ought to have. And if we take a model that assumes, and this is an assumption, that all children are exposed to quality first teaching in the areas that impact and support learning in the classroom, so that would be literacy and that would be oral language, then what you find from that is that children who come up as having difficulty having received that good teaching are a smaller number. You can then do specialist, evidence-informed interventions in perhaps groups where the children don't have to have a special need at that point, but they're having difficulties. And once that has been done, and providing there is evidence that underpins that type of intervention, and there are studies where there are very, very clear evidence, then the child that is no longer or is not progressing in that context, then becomes an issue of concern. And that takes on some of the issues about variability across schools and local authorities. And it also means that you're thinking about teaching and learning across the curriculum in different areas. So you might have very good teaching and learning for reading, but not very good for maths, for example. So I think it's the wrong question. Are we identifying too many children with SEN?
I think it's an interesting question, are we identifying too many children with SEN? Because we did some work with the European Agency for Special Educational Needs 3 years ago, I think. And the across most European countries, one percentage keeps coming out, around 3% of their school population have special educational needs, which is very close to the 2.8% we designate statements of special educational needs to. But then when you look at the much higher figures, it is quite hard, I think, to see how almost a quarter of a population can have something special about them. And we also work in some schools, these are mainstream schools, where they will say to us at Cengage, well, 80% of our children have special educational needs. And to me, the question there is, shouldn't the whole school's curriculum and its resources be geared to supporting those children? And in a way, they're not special within the context of that school, are they? They are the school's intake.
But that's the issue about quality first teaching.
Absolutely.
And also the fact that actually schools have different intakes. And if you're in one of the nice shire counties, then the intake is very different from, you know, downtown,
absolutely,
inner London, where you have high proportions of children who have a range of difficulties. So, you know, the 3% holds only because we've constructed that 3% and it relates to the testing that we do.
Yes.
The other issue is a major issue about teaching and learning. And, you know, it's quite interesting, it also depends on countries. So if we take something around reading, there are very few children in Italy that are identified as having reading difficulties in the early stages of reading because of the way the orthography, the written Italian is, it's very transparent. Where problems start coming up are when they're starting to write. So they have problems in spelling, particularly. And then, so there's a contextual effect that we might have more children with reading difficulties, but that's something to do with English,
mm-hmm,
as a language. And you get exactly the same thing, you know, people look to medicine as very clear in diagnostic categories, but it's not clear. And whether you get identified with particular types of problems may depend on the hospital you go to, the consultant you see, in a whole range of areas. And that's one of the big debates at the moment is around the revision of the diagnostic statistical manual of diseases and around health issues, but also around mental health and child development disorders. There's a tremendous amount of debate about what you're doing and how you should do this categorizing. So
and enormous variation in the underlying evidence that feeds into it. There are studies that have been done in this country that suggests that of a class of 30 secondary school pupils, perhaps a quarter will have some need for visual correction, spectacles or contact lenses. Now, if you go into a typical class, you may see one or two, but you may see many that haven't.
The other very important thing for education is how that maps out for the child in their learning and socialization at different points in development. It's likely to change. But let me give an example where we have fairly good objective measures of assessing hearing loss, right? You can test it, the audiologist can do it, and it'll fluctuate, but roughly, if you've got a sensory neural loss, you can do that. We know that some children with a sensory neural loss, which would put them in the moderate range, have quite marked problems in classrooms with learning and with reading, and other children in exactly the same range with exactly the same kind of support don't. And we don't exactly know why that is. So there's one is the nature of the problem, and the other is how it manifests in the classroom and the sensitivity of the classroom to adapt and the teacher to adapt appropriately.